This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And today we're not going to talk about something that is paranormal per se, but we're going to talk about something that frankly is far more frightening than anything paranormal. That is, if the assertions and theories of our guest today are correct. We're talking about David Icke. He is our guest. He's formerly best known as a TV sports commentator and leading spokesman for the British Green Party. David is a world-renowned philosopher, social visionary, and in his view, a tireless campaigner for the truth. He credits a widely publicized spiritual transformation with giving him the courage to speak out fearlessly against what he views as lies and deceit. These days, he travels extensively, offers public talks, and discussions about the belief systems and clandestine interests, in his view, that shape our world. He's the author of several acclaimed titles, including Heal the World, The Robot's Rebellion, and Truth Vibrations, and we're so glad to have him with us today. Now, when we look at your set of theories, and my goodness, they're quite a bit there. We haven't had you on the programs before, so I would be hard-pressed to think people haven't heard of you and kind of your thoughts. But maybe if we can start kind of at square one. When you look at the world, I mean, essentially, your belief system is that pretty much everything we see is not as it appears. That they're kind of these overlords that are behind everything, and we're essentially being lied to about the nature of reality, our place in it, and pretty much every political, religious, and governmental institution out there. Is that a fair kind of thumbnail sketch of your views?
Yes, but like any thumbnail sketch of something so vast, while it... ticks a few boxes, it obviously in a few sentences misses the enormity of the connections and the information and indeed observations of the world that, mm-hmm. that support that. For instance, yes, all these institutions are involved, but they are all compartmentalized. If you look at a secret society, they are broken up into degrees. They in information terms, in knowledge terms, in awareness terms, they are compartmentalized. So people in the bottom degree do not know anything like as much about what the organization's doing and what it's about as those in the leading top degrees. And so while the institutions, like the institutions of religion, are very much involved in this perception deception of the human race, which is what it is, the vast majority of people within those religions, as within the media, as within the system in general, have no idea what they're actually part of. They see it because they're told to see it from a completely different perspective. So what I'm saying is that there is a force, which I'm coming to America in September to talk in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, and the events start at 10 in the morning and they finish at 10 in the evening. This is what I've just done two in Britain to start off this world tour. And the reason they are apparently so long is because of the enormity of the dots that need connecting across a vast range of apparently unconnected subjects, people, everything, before the pixels become pictures. And by the end of the day, people are seeing pictures, not pixels, of the world, and suddenly the world looks very different. But the foundation of the suppression of humanity is to give us, sell us, download us, program us to have a fake self-identity. We are awareness. We are a state of being aware. What we call our name, what we call our labels, our life story, our race, our background, our income bracket, whatever, these are experiences. They're not who we are. They are experiences which our awareness is having. What the system does, and it does it from cradle to grave, is persuade us that those experiences, which we give labels to, are actually who we are. And that together constitutes what I call phantom self. And Phantom Self sees the world basically only through the five senses. And if you look at the world through the five senses alone, all you can see is limitation. You can see limitation in possibility of making anything happen. And you see limitation of self in your own power to direct your own experience, direct your own life. And if you look at the way the system works, you come out of the womb and immediately your perceptions are being downloaded. They're being downloaded from your parents, not through malevolence, most of the time anyway, overwhelmingly not through malevolence, but because your parents have been through the system you're about to go through. They've accepted that as the perception of normal, the perception of real, and then they pass on those perceptions of you to you, thinking they're doing right by you. You then go into something so unbelievably bravely called education. And from a very early age, right the way through your formative years into your teenage years, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, you are put in front of authority figures who are telling you what normal is, what possible is, what reality is, what you are. They're telling you when you have to be there, when you can leave, when you can eat, when you can talk, when you can't talk, what is, what isn't, what's possible, what's not possible. And then you go out into the world, into the institutions of the world, and you take with you, whether it's journalism or politics or banking or business or doctors or scientists, you take out into those different institutions that basic download of normal, that basic download of reality. And then these institutions, peopled by those that have been through this process and bought it, then confirm to each other that the download of normal and the download of reality is true. And it creates what I call, in human society, the postage stamp consensus, where people have this postage stamp tiny perception of normal. And then what happens if anyone steps off the postage stamp and comes from another point of view that challenges the postage stamp version of normal? Well, they're ridiculed or condemned or dismissed as mad or whatever. And so the postage stamp consensus polices itself. It's like at least sheep need a sheepdog to keep them in line. Humans keep themselves in line by policing the postage stamp consensus. And what I've been doing for the last 25, 26 years, Jim, is basically not just step off the postage stamp, but sprint off it and keep sprinting and keep sprinting. And whatever's been thrown at me, I'm not bothered. I'm interested in the truth, not a popularity contest. I want to know what's happening. I don't want a statue.
Now why does this, okay, the postage stamp consensus, why does it change? I mean, for example, here in America, you know, there was one set of what was, quote, normal in the 1950s, the Eisenhower era, let's say. That changed drastically in the 60s with the anti-war movement, and it's moved on today, where we kind of look back at the 50s and say, you know, what was considered normal back then was pretty draconian on a number of levels, and there's a new normal, right? Why does this postage stamp point of view of reality or normal, why does it consensus? Why does it change over time? Why does it evolve? If we have overlords, wouldn't they want just everything to stay the same, or do they have shifting goals?
No, I mean, it's if you like, it's a journey. And the shifting normal is within the parameters of the prevailing normal all the way through these different apparently different phases of normal. It's still basically the same normal. You would have been laughed at in the 50s, as you would be laughed at now, I know, because I have been, for talking about, for instance, a non-human force manipulating human affairs.
Sure.
I mean, so that's what I mean by normal, that postage stamp normal. But what's happening is we're being led along a road. I've got a chapter in my book, Phantom Self, which is called Transphantomism. And that refers to the process of transhumanism taking us to a state of disconnected awareness of true self. That is even massively in advance of what I call Phantom Self. phantom self is a perception of self, which is basically little me and all the labels of little me. And when you are focused only on little me, you are not getting the influence that you could get from big me, from eternal me, from infinite me. And so people get caught in phantom self. They get caught in what some people call the box. But where we're being led is into transhumanism, which is to put technology inside people to connect them to what people like Ray Kurzweil, the PR man for Frankenstein and this old transhumanist nightmare,
the singularity. What he calls
the cloud. They're openly talking about this now, because what they're selling it as, Jim, is if we get connected to the cloud, i.e. a technological AI reality, then we'll become superhuman. Actually, the truth is, and this is the big alert that I'm putting out there as much as I can, is that we'll become subhuman. Mm-hmm. Because if we open our awareness, in other words, we go beyond the program sense of everything, we by definition start to connect with our infinite expanded self consciousness. Because it's not that we have to seek enlightenment. We don't. We are enlightened. That's our natural state. But what's happened is these layers, these onion skin layers of programming, giving us a tiny little me perception of everything, especially self, have acted like a block between, if you like, the conscious mind and infinite awareness beyond it. We're supposed to be moving as one unit, but these programs put a firewall in, if you want to use computer language. But that's one level. But where this transhumanism, transphantomism is going, and going very quickly, is to connect conscious mind, conscious awareness, to a technological sub-reality, which they call the cloud or the smart grid or whatever it is. And therefore, as Kurzweil openly says, we will do our thinking from the cloud. And the more this happens, the less and less human there will be and the more cloud there will be until there's no human left. He says this, but he's selling it as it's the way that we become superhuman. He must absolutely know that's a nonsense. And so we're heading towards a situation where what people call in the spiritual movement our higher self becomes not expanded awareness, but becomes a technological sub-reality, feeding its AI sense of reality to the conscious mind. And, you know, if you are going to do that, you have to do two things. You have to lead people along a road. And, you know, shaman around the world, and not least one that I quote in the books and in the world tour events from Central America, described it brilliantly. Basically, what they have to do is advance people intellectually, it five sense intellect, if you like, so that people develop the intellectual ability to work with this, from human point of view, advanced technology. But to suppress us spiritually in terms of wisdom, in terms of expanded awareness, to see not just the dots of technology, oh, look, this is good, this is the latest one, but actually to see the picture in which that is happening, and thus see that what we're actually doing is building our own prison. This Central American shaman asked the question, you know, how do you explain the brilliance of man the engineer against his stupidity of his beliefs? Because we've been intellectually led along. This is what the education's doing. The education system worldwide is not about the spirit. It's not about the infinite awareness. It's about the intellect. It's about the left side of the brain, basically. Even the right side of the brain is not stimulated because of all the cutbacks in art and creativity. And so you get the intellectual knowledge to build your technological prison. but you don't expand your awareness to see the wisdom of seeing that's what you're doing. And now, that's what's happening.
Now, for example, you know, I love technology. We couldn't do these programs without technology, but all particularly, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I grew up with a dial telephone on the wall. That was basically it. And now we have...
I'm 64. I grew up with less, mate.
My point is, technology has gone absolutely wild in the last 20 years. The world's really changed. Our smartphones and virtual reality and all the wonders that we see, is this part of the conspiracy to lead us down this primrose path in your view?
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, this virtual reality, well, we live in a virtual reality, actually. I've been saying that for years, and now, you know, I'm seeing scientists coming out and saying, well, it looks like we do. But let's look at the process. It's a process of what I call it the totalitarian tiptoe. You do things in steps. You can't unleash it all at once, because the change would be so fantastic that people would actually say, what's going on? So you do it in steps. And if you take the process, step one to this transhumanist technology inside the body connected to the cloud agenda, was getting people addicted to what I call holdables, technology that you hold, like smartphones. And that addiction for vast, vast number of people is already achieved. And then you start moving towards what they call wearables. These are your Google Glass, your Apple Watch, your mm-hmm. Bluetooth. Now you've got contact with the body. You're further on now. And then they move, and they're moving now. I mean, to what they call implantables. I read an article late last year, in Forbes magazine, where it was predicting that implantables would be as common as wearables and holdables within 3 or 4 years. And that's how fast it's going. And so they're taking you along a road. Here, come on, kitty, here, kitty, pulling you along a road to the point where people are queuing, or what you call in America, standing in line, in the middle of the night, just so you can get the latest technological step on the road to the technological prison before anyone else does. The addiction is extraordinary. And if you look at it, they're saying that the whole world, everything, is going to be controlled by artificial intelligence. Well, I've asked this question myself in the books, and I go into it in the talks. It's an interesting question. What is artificial technology? What is it? What is it? What drives it? What drives its decision making? And we've reached the point now where we are closing in very fast on a robot army that is driven by artificial intelligence, with artificial intelligence making decisions on who gets killed and who doesn't. And this is not fantasy. This is fact. And you look at what's coming out of the military and what's coming out of the Navy in America in terms of artificial intelligence running the military and making life and death decisions. So what is this AI? You see, the thing is that if you only see the world through the five senses, basically, you have a perception of life, and that is a perception of what you can see, touch, and taste. That's some life is something with a head, a torso, two legs, and two arms, or it's an animal, or it's a plant. It's something you can see. It's got form. But life is awareness, and everything is aware. It's not everything is infinitely aware in awareness of itself. You know, boy George Bush, I rest my case. There are different levels of awareness within infinite awareness, but it doesn't have to take the form that you see, touch, and taste to be life, to be awareness that can make decisions. In the end, awareness is just a state of being aware. It has no form. And what I'm saying about this force that's manipulating world events is it does take infinite forms, but in the end, it is just a very distorted, a very inverted state of awareness. I am saying that when this artificial intelligence controlled world is in place, and indeed well before it's finally in place, that this AI they're talking about that's going to run everything via technology and the internet, and everything's going to be connected to the internet, therefore controlled by the internet, what the CIA calls the Internet of Things, that artificial intelligence is that force that I've been exposing for 25 years.
Now, when we talk about this, I mean, the thought process comes up, if you have these overlords, and I'm talking above the governmental people, I'm talking above the institutions and so forth, but I'm talking the ultimate power behind this, whether it's like a reptilian race or whatever it might be. If they're so powerful, why don't they just enslave us by overwhelming us physically and mentally? If they're so far ahead of us, why do they need to introduce, in your view, these things in kind of a gradual frog in boiling water kind of sense?
Well, very, very simple. I mean, when you look at the common themes around the ancient world, where they're describing this force, because it's all over the ancient world. But the thing is, they give it different names and they symbolize it in different forms. And thus people think they're talking about different things. They're not. They're talking about the same force. If you look at what the Gnostic people said about the force, they called the Archons, it is an absolute mirror of what the pre-Islamic and Islamic world say about what they call the jinn. It's a mirror. I mean, for instance, the Gnostics say that the archons are made from luminous fire. The pre-Islamic and Islamic world say the jinn are made from smokeless fire. I mean, and both say that the jinn and the archons have an ability to create illusions, what we would call in our language virtual reality illusions, to manipulate the perceptions of the target population. A common theme, there are many, of all these stories about this same force under different names, is that it is vastly inferior in terms of potential and potential awareness, potential expansion of awareness to humanity. And they, in my terms, I would say it like this. To control humanity, they have to create a system where in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Because if humanity was in a two-eyed, three-eyed state of expanded awareness, this game will be over. What they have to do is manipulate humanity into a more suppressed state of awareness than this force is in. And that's what this whole perception deception is about. You look through the ages, and whenever, certainly since this hack, this takeover began, and you'll find that anybody who was basically seeking to expose the true nature of who we are, the expanded infinite nature and potential of who we are, was always targeted by the authority of the day. It's always happened. They do not see visionaries and people that can see beyond the program. They are the ultimate danger to this whole game, this whole manipulation. And so through the ages, they're the ones that's been targeted. I have a great friend in South Africa called Credo Mutwa, who's the Zulu shaman and official historian of the Zulu nation, is in his 90s now. And he was telling me decades ago how the first people that they targeted when the British Empire went into Africa were the shaman. He said they wanted to find out what they knew, and when they thought they knew got everything that they had to give them, then they killed them because they didn't want this this knowledge. And what has happened, and very much in line with this whole theme I'm talking about of developing people with the five sense intellect, but not expanded awareness, has been the creation of what we call mainstream science. Mainstream science is Stone Age science. It's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. A postage stamp is giving it too much credit. What it is, it's about seeing things basically only in physicality. We have quantum physics, and these other disciplines have to acknowledge quantum physics exists, but then they go about their business as if it doesn't exist. We've got he's known in America as well, but we've got a well-known mainstream scientist here called Dr. Richard Dawkins.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Who goes around trying to dismiss and ridicule anything that's outside his pea-sized perception of reality. And in one book, he said that reality was not malleable, i.e. it's physical and can't be changed, nonsense, but that his knowledge of quantum physics was, quote, a bit foggy. I mean, what? And so mainstream science is not there to expand knowledge of reality. It's there to suppress knowledge of reality. And I was so encouraged to see, to watch the entire series recently of the Morgan Freeman fronted a series called Through the Wormhole, in which we were able to see that within this scientific myopia in the mainstream, there are some people who are asking the kind of questions that need asking about reality and are coming to conclusions that are not a million miles from some of mine. So we are making progress, not least for this reason. The great mysteries of life, which are only mysteries because people are not looking in the right area. I mean, if you're looking for something and it's in field A, and you're only prepared to look in field B and C, you're never going to find it. It's not because it doesn't exist. It's not that it can't be found. It's just that you won't go where you can find it. And this is how mainstream science is laid out to suppress finding what this manipulating force doesn't want us to know, i.e. the nature of reality and the true infinite nature of self. And so science has been used as a block on understanding reality in its true and infinite sense, not on seeking it. And that's not by accident, that's by design.
Now, so the second part of the title of your book, it's Phantom Self and How to Find the Real One. I mean, if we are indeed being enslaved by these ultimate masters who are looking to totally enslave the human race, what can little old Jim Harold, or, I mean, David Icke has really made a big footprint out there, but what can individuals do to break out of this kind of prison?
Well, first of all, it's to realize there is no such thing as little Jim Harold. There is only the perception of it. And, you know, I'm a great believer. You know, we can look for solutions all we like for our problems. But what normally happens is the same level of awareness seeks the solution to the level of to the problem created by the same level of awareness. Einstein made this point. And thus, problems tend to, or solutions tend not to lead to solutions, but just another expression of the problem. My approach is not to find a solution. It's to remove the cause of the problem. And then the problem goes away. It has to, because the cause is gone. And for me, the cause of the problem is the way that people allow themselves, and I say allow themselves, and it is allow themselves in the end, because we have a choice. But we also need to be kind to ourselves on that, because the programming is total and incessant from the moment we enter the world, indeed before even, energetically. We need to, first of all, acknowledge that we have been programmed with a belief system, a sense of normal, a sense of self-identity, and therefore get ourselves a literal or symbolic blank sheet of paper and start again. Put aside everything you've ever been told to believe in and see if it can justify itself on that blank sheet of paper. And if it can't, by evidence, if it can't by the fact that you intuitively don't feel it deserves to go on that blank sheet of paper, then it doesn't. And we start then to construct our own sense of reality rather than just hitch a ride and download the system's version of reality. And that very change starts the transformation energetically, i.e. in terms of awareness. That change from self-identity with your name, your background, your race, your life story, and reassessing and achieving your self-identity as being infinite awareness, having that experience. If you self-identify with being infinite awareness, then your energetic field must move. Your frequency must change, because perception equals frequency. Well, it does in our realm of reality anyway. And so if you have a sense of little me, that's your self-identity, you will have a much lower frequency. Not because you're an idiot, but because your sense of identity must generate that frequency. One causes and affects the other. When you change your self-identity and move it and expand it to I am infinite awareness, having that experience, then your frequency must change. And the higher the frequency that you're resonating on, the more energy you can hold, process, i.e. information, awareness, insight. And suddenly you start to see things that you didn't see before. Now you're starting to see pictures, not pixels. You're starting to see how things fit together. I've been through it. I'm not surmising here. I've been through all this. I've experienced it. This is what happens. And it's not, you know, it's not about, you know, endless seeking and sackcloth and ashes and all these things. It's simply a change of self-identity from little me to infinite awareness. And from that, everything starts to shift. Everything starts to move. And, you know, what happens then, of course, is you start saying things, you start behaving in ways, you start being in ways that are outside the postage stamp, because now you're seeing the postage stamp is a village idiot, not the all-knowing normal that we've been told it is. And thus, of course, you're going to be saying things that get people to laugh at you or dismiss you or whatever. But, you know, once you get into a state of expanded awareness, you couldn't care less anymore. You just do what you know to be right.
You know, when you think about something like The Matrix, or even stepping back, the great British classic TV series, The Prisoner, do you think people have tried to hint surreptitiously at these themes without coming out and saying it through something like entertainment?
Well, the thing is, Jim, that I don't know what the motivation was behind it, but the Matrix trilogy was extraordinarily accurate in the basic themes of the reality that we are experiencing. And remember this, what controlled the Matrix? What controlled the human illusory world that the human race in the movies took to be real? Machines. Technology, artificial intelligence. Yes, of course. And if you look, and there's a negative side of this, because if you look at the movies that have come out, particularly in the last 10 years, more than that, but particularly in the last 10 years, you're seeing one after the other, after the other, after the other, which is depicting this dystopian society that I've been warning about. Now, why is that happening? Because it's called preemptive programming. Mm-hmm. What is planned is so dramatically different to the world that we've known, dramatically, unspeakably so. And therefore, this manipulation has a problem. And that is that the world they want to introduce is so vastly different to the one that there's been, that the difference is going to be blatantly obvious to people. And that's a big challenge to what's going on, what's happening, why is the world changing like this? So all these movies that are depicting this world, and it's almost laughable. They're one after the other. They're coming out is to make the conscious and subconscious mind somehow familiar with the world that they want to bring in, and thus, as it comes in literally, because of the all the movies and depictions of it, it doesn't seem as abnormal and dramatically different as it would without that preemptive programming introducing you drip, 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 drip,
conditioning
to that world, conditioning you to that world. That's what's happening. But the Matrix was absolutely spot on. And there's another movie that I think was spot on. I don't know whether it was meant to be, but symbolically it was. And that's Avatar. You see, mm-hmm. Avatar. Yep. Depicted with the Na'vi, the blue people, the kind of world that humanity used to live in. It's what the ancients used to call the Golden Age before the Great Takeover. And the pre-takeover humanity was much more expanded in its awareness of reality and knew that everything was one. And through this unified infinite awareness, they could communicate with animals and with plants, etc., because they were aware that actually one infinite consciousness expresses itself in all these infinite ways, like the crests of a wave in an infinite ocean. So that's what you had with the Na'vi. But what happened with the American military in that Avatar movie came the very mentality that has taken this world over. It's all about money. It's all about I want, so I will take. It's about technology. It's about being completely closed and insensitive to the greater reality. And they came in, of course, in the story to take resources they thought would make vast amounts of money. But how did they do it? This is interesting. How did they do it? How did they infiltrate the blue people society? They did it by taking on the bodies, the outer bodies of blue people. So they could infiltrate Na'vi society while the Na'vi had no idea they were being infiltrated because the infiltrators looked like they did. And that's what has happened to the human race. These bloodlines that I talk about that end up not just in the positions of power that we see, but more importantly, in the shadows, pulling the strings of the people in power that we see, they have infiltrated human society by looking human, when actually their prime state is not human, is anything but human. So again, you know, the Avatar movie was really symbolic, reading it from where I'm coming from, in terms of being tremendously symbolic of what's happened and what is happening to humanity currently. By the way, before we leave that,
oh yes,
please. When you look at history, what we call history, before 6,000 years ago, 4,000 BC, this world was not as it is now. There was a dramatic change, and this is mainstream people talk about this, in human behavior, human perception, when violence came in, when war as we know it came in, when bricks and mortar religion as we know it came in, when male-dominated societies came in, when hierarchical societies came in, and it happened very quickly, and there's a clear point when it started about 6,000 years ago, and humanity became the mentality that we have become, as opposed to what we were before.
I want to ask one other question, then I want to find out where folks can find all your books and your seminars and all of the information. But this occurred to me as you were talking about this idea. You know, Elon Musk, the entrepreneur and billionaire, and there have been scientists recently who've held conferences on the idea of us living in a computer simulation. In your view, are these people who are somehow hinting at the reality of nature as well?
Well, I've been writing, Jim, for a long time that we live in an advanced version of what we call in our reality a computer simulation. The evidence is massive. And I saw that Elon Musk said recently that the chances that we don't live in a simulated reality are billions to one, but we don't live in one. Mm-hmm. That's how much he's convinced we do. But look at this. I mean, what Elon Musk is saying on one level is, and other people are, like Stephen Hawking and many others, that this rush to AI is threatening the existence, the very existence of humanity itself. What people like Stephen Hawking, I don't think, realize is that it's meant to. But what Elon Musk has said is, if we're going to stop that happening and stop machines and robotic technology becoming more advanced than humans, so that humans become its plaything, then humans are going to have technology inside them to compete with the robots. So he's turned it into another excuse to advance the very agenda that he's warning about, which is kind of bizarre. I would love to have a chat with a bloke and see if he's just confused or whether it's part of an agenda, because it's the most ludicrous thing. But you're right that it's coming out more and more. I mean, it's just moving so fast. But I explain all this in the books and in the talks, and I put the dots together, and the world looks a very different place.
Well, if folks want to join you on that journey and connect those dots in your view to take a look at your theories and your assertions, where would they go for the books, the seminars, and everything you do?
Well, it's a one-stop shop, davidicke.com, I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. They go to the headlines page every day. They see the daily news put in a different context. They'll get all the world tour events, like I'm in New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco in September. And they can get all the books, and we have the books shipped from within America. So you know, there's not a vast postage cost to come from Britain. They come from within America, so they're very quick, and also the postage is negligible.
Excellent, David Icke. Thank you for joining us today on the program.
Pleasure, Jim. Thank you. Bye.
Agree or disagree with David? You have to admit, his theories are incredibly earth-shaking and compelling. I'll leave it for you to decide, as we always do here at the Paranormal Podcast. I thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope that you will rate and review the shows. Just go over to iTunes or wherever you listen to the program. Give us a 4 or 5 star review, please, if you enjoy what we do. And for example, iTunes, they have a place where you can write a couple sentences about the show. Please do that as well, because that really helps and helps raise us on the charts and increases the visibility, because we don't have this big marketing budget that many out there do, these big companies doing podcasts these days, but we have something more important. We have you. Let your voice be heard. We thank you so much for joining us today on the Paranormal Podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.